U.S. History Textbook. Text available for free at cnx.org. Audio recording available for free at educateforfree.com. Summary. 18.1. Inventors of the Age. Inventors in the late 19th century flooded the market with new technological advances. Encouraged by Great Britain's Industrial Revolution and eager for economic development in the wake of the Civil War, business investors sought the latest ideas upon which they could capitalize, both to transform the nation as well as to make a personal profit. These inventions were a key piece of the massive shift towards industrialization that followed. For both families and businesses, these inventions eventually represented a fundamental change in their way of life. Although the technology spread slowly, it did spread across the country. Whether it was a company that could now produce 10 times more products with new factories, or a household that could communicate with distant relations, the old way of doing things was disappearing. Communication technologies, electric power production, and steel production were perhaps the three most significant developments of the time. While the first two affected both personal lives and business development, the latter influenced business growth first and foremost, as the ability to produce large steel elements efficiently and cost-effectively led to permanently changes in the direction of industrial growth. 18.2. From Invention to Industrial Growth. As the three tycoons profiled in this section illustrate, the end of the 19th century was a period in history that offered tremendous financial rewards to those who had the right combination of skill, ambition, and luck. Whether self-made millionaires like Carnegie or Rockefeller, or born to wealth like Morgan, these men were the linchpins that turned inventors' ideas into industrial growth. Steel production in particular, but also oil refining techniques and countless other inventions, changed how the industries in the country could operate, allowing them to grow in scale and scope like never before. It is also critical to note how these different men managed their businesses and ambition. Where Carnegie felt strongly that it was the job of the wealthy to give back in their lifetime to the greater community, his fellow tycoons did not necessarily agree. Although he contributed to many philanthropic efforts, Rockefeller's financial success was built on the backs of ruined and bankrupt companies, and he came to be condemned by progressive reformers who questioned the impact on the working class as well as the dangers of consolidating too much power and wealth into one individual's hands. Morgan sought wealth strictly through the investment in and subsequent purchase of others' hard work. Along the way, the models of management they adopted, horizontal and vertical integration, trusts, holding companies, and investment brokerages, became commonplace in American businesses. Very quickly, large business enterprise fell under the control of fewer and fewer individuals and trusts. In sum, their ruthlessness, their ambition, their generosity, and their management made up the workings of America's industrial age. 18.3. Building Industrial America on the Backs of Labor. After the Civil War, as more and more people crowded into urban areas and joined the ranks of wage earners, the landscape of American labor changed. For the first time, the majority of workers were employed by others in factories and offices in the cities. Factory workers, in particular, suffered from the inequity of their positions. Owners had no legal restrictions on exploiting employees with long hours in dehumanizing and poorly paid work. Women and children were hired for the lowest possible wages, but even men's wages were barely enough upon which to live. Poor working conditions combined with few substantial options for relief led workers to frustration and sporadic acts of protest and violence, acts that rarely, if ever, gained them any lasting positive effects. Workers realized that change would require organization, and thus began early labor unions that sought to win rights for all workers through political advocacy and owner engagement. Groups like the National Labor Union and Knights of Labor both opened their membership to any and all wage earners, male or female, black or white, regardless of skill. Their approach was a departure from the craft unions of the very early 19th century, which were unique to their individual industries. While these organizations gained members for a time, they both ultimately failed when public reaction to violent labor strikes turned opinion against them. The American Federation of Labor, a loose affiliation of different unions, grew in the wake of these universal organizations, although negative publicity impeded their work as well. In all, the century ended with the vast majority of American laborers, unrepresented by any collective or union, leaving them vulnerable to the power well wielded by a factory ownership. 18.4, a new American consumer culture. While tensions between owners and workers continued to grow, and wage earners struggled with the challenges of industrial work, the culture of American consumerism was changing. Greater choice, easier access, and improved goods at lower prices meant that even lower-income Americans, whether rural and shopping via mail order or urban and shopping in large department stores, had more options. These increased options led to a rise in advertising as businesses competed for customers. Furthermore, the opportunity to buy on credit meant that Americans could have their goods even without ready cash. The result was a population that had a better standard of living than ever before, even as they went into debt or worked long factory hours to pay for it. 19.1, urbanization and its challenges. Urbanization spread rapidly in the mid-19th century due to a confluence of factors. New technologies, such as electricity and steam engines, transformed factory work, allowing factories to move closer to urban centers and away from the rivers that had previously been vital sources of both water, power, and transportation. The growth of factories, as well as innovations such as electric lighting, which allowed them to run at all hours of the day and night, created a massive need for workers who poured in from both rural areas of the United States and from Eastern and Southern Europe. As cities grew, they were unable to cope with the rapid influx of workers, and the living conditions for the working class were terrible. Tight living quarters with inadequate plumbing and sanitation led to widespread illness. Churches, civic organizations, and the secular settlement house movement all sought to provide some relief to the urban working class, but conditions remained brutal for many new city dwellers. 19.2, the African-American Great Migration and the New European Immigration. For both African Americans migrating from the post-war South and immigrants arriving from Southeastern Europe, a combination of push and pull factors influenced their migration to America's urban centers. African Americans moved away from the racial violence and limited opportunities that existed in the rural South, seeking wages and steady work as well as the opportunity to vote safely as free men. However, they quickly learned that racial discrimination and violence were not limited to the South. For European immigrants, famine and persecution led them to seek a new life in the United States, where the stories said the streets were paved in gold. Of course, in northeastern and midwestern cities, both groups found a more challenging welcome than they had anticipated. City residents blamed recent arrivals for the ills of the cities, from overcrowding to a rise in crime. Activist groups pushed for anti-immigration legislation, seeking to limit the waves of immigrants that sought a better future in the United States. 19.3, relief from the chaos of urban life. The burgeoning cities brought together both rich and poor, working class and upper class. However, the realities of urban dwellers' lives varied dramatically based on where they fell in the social chain. Entertainment and leisure time activities were heavily dependent on one's status and wealth. For the working poor, amusement parks and baseball games offered inexpensive entertainment and a brief break from the squalor of the tenements. For the emerging middle class of salaried professionals, an escape to the suburbs kept them removed from the city's chaos outside of working hours. And for the wealthy, immersion in arts and culture, as well as inclusion in the social register, allowed them to socialize exclusively with those they felt were of the same social status. The City Beautiful movement benefited all city dwellers, with its emphasis on public green spaces and more beautiful and practical city boulevards. In all, these different opportunities for leisure and pleasure made city life manageable for citizens who lived there. 19.4, change reflected in thought and writing. Americans were overwhelmed by the rapid pace and scale of change at the close of the 19th century. Authors and thinkers tried to assess the meaning of the country's seismic shift in culture and society through their work. Fiction writers often used realism in an attempt to paint an accurate portrait of how people were living at the time. Proponents of economic developments and cultural changes cited social Darwinism as an acceptable model to explain why some people succeeded and others failed, whereas other philosophers looked more closely at Darwin's work and sought to apply a model of proof and pragmatism to all ideas and institutions. Other sociologists and philosophers criticized the change of the era, citing the inequities found in the new industrial economy and its negative effects on workers. 20.1, Political Corruption in Postbellum America. In the years following the Civil War, American politics were disjointed, corrupt, and at the federal level, largely ineffective in terms of addressing the challenges that Americans faced. Local and regional politics and the bosses who ran the political machines dominated through systematic graft and bribery. Americans around the country recognized that solutions to the mounting problems they faced would not come from Washington, D.C., but from their local political leaders. Thus, the cycle of federal ineffectiveness and machine politics continued through the remainder of the century, relatively unabated. Meanwhile, in the Compromise of 1877, an electoral commission declared Rutherford B. Hayes the winner of the contested presidential election in exchange for the withdrawal of federal troops from South Carolina, Louisiana, and Florida. As a result, Southern Democrats were able to reestablish control over their home governments, which would have a tremendous impact on the direction of Southern politics and society in the decades to come. 20.2, the key political issues, patronage, tariffs, and gold. All told, from 1872 through 1892, Gilded Age politics were little more than political showmanship. The political issues of the day, including the spoils system versus civil service reform, high tariffs versus low, and business regulation, all influenced politicians more than the country at large. Very few measures offer direct assistance to Americans who continued to struggle with the transformation into an industrial society. The inefficiency of patronage-driven federal government, combined with a growing laissez-faire attitude among American public, made the passage of effective legislation difficult. Some of Harrison's policies, such as the Sherman Antitrust Act and the Sherman Silver Purchase Act, aimed to provide relief but remained largely ineffective. 20.3, Farmers' Revolt in the Populist Era. Factors such as overproduction and high tariffs left the country's farmers in increasingly desperate straits, and the federal government's inability to address their concerns left them disillusioned and worried. Uneven responses from state governments had many farmers seeking an alternative solution to their problems. Taking note of the labor movements growing in industrial cities around the country, farmers began to organize into alliances similar to workers' unions. These were models of cooperation where large numbers could offer more bargaining power with major players such as railroads. Ultimately, the alliances were unable to initiate widespread change for their benefit. Still, drawing from the cohesion of purpose, farmers sought to create change from the inside, through politics. They hoped the creation of the Populist Party in 1891 would lead to a president who put the people, and in particular, the farmers first. 20.4, social and labor unrest in the 1890s. As the economy worsened, more Americans suffered. As the federal government continued to offer few solutions, the populist movement began to grow. Populist groups approached the 1896 election anticipating that the mass of struggling Americans would support their movement for change. When Democrats chose William Jennings Bryan for their candidate, however, they chose a politician who largely fit the mold of the populist platform. From his birthplace of Nebraska to his advocacy of the silver standard that most farmers desired. Throwing their support behind Bryan as well, populists hoped to see a candidate in the White House who would embody the populist goals, if not the party name. When Bryan lost to Republican William McKinley, the Populist Party lost much of its momentum. As the country climbed out of the Depression, the interest in a third party faded away, although the reformist movement remained intact. 21.1, the origins of the progressive spirit in America. In its first decade, the progressive era was a grassroots effort that ushered in reforms at state and local levels. At the beginning of the 20th century, however, progressive endeavors captured the attention of the federal government. The challenges of the late 19th century were manifold. Fast-growing cities that were ill-equipped to house the working poor, hands-off politicians shackled into impotence by their system of political favors, and rural Americans struggling to keep their farms afloat. The muckraking journalists of the era published books and articles highlighting the social inequities of the day and intolling everyday Americans to help find solutions. Educated, middle-class, Anglo-Saxon Protestants dominated the movement, but progressives were not a homogeneous group. The movement counted African Americans, both women and men, and urban as well as rural dwellers among its ranks. Progressive causes ranged from anti-liquor campaigns to fair pay. Together, progressives sought to advance the spread of democracy, improve efficiency in government and industry, and promote social justice. Progressivism at the grassroots level. Progressive campaigns stretched from the hurricane-ruined townships of Texas to the slums of New York, from the factory floor to the saloon door. But what tied together these disparate causes and groups was the belief that the country was in dire need of reform, and that answers were to be found within the activism and expertise of predominantly middle-class Americans on behalf of troubled communities. Some efforts, such as the National Child Labor Committee, pushed for federal legislation. However, most progressive initiatives took place at the state and local level, as progressives sought to harness public support to place pressure on politicians. At the beginning of the 20th century, a more radical, revolutionary breed of progressivism began to evolve. While these radical progressives generally shared the goals of their more mainstream counterparts, their strategies differed significantly. Mainstream progressives and many middle-class Americans feared groups such as the Socialist Party of America and the Industrial Workers of the World, which emphasized workers' empowerment and direct action. 21.3. New Voices for Women and African Americans. The progressive commitment to promoting democracy and social justice created an environment within which the movements for women's and African American rights grew and flourished. Emergent leaders such as Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, Carrie Chapman Catt, and Alice Paul spread the cause of women's suffrage, drawing in other activists and making the case for a constitutional amendment ensuring a woman's right to vote. African Americans, guided by leaders such as Booker T. Washington and W.B. Du Bois, strove for civil rights and economic opportunity, although their philosophies and strategies differed significantly. In the women's and civil rights movements alike, activists both advanced their own cause and paved the way for later efforts aimed at expanding equal opportunity and citizenship. 21.4. Progressivism in the White House. Theodore Roosevelt became president only by historical accident, but his activism in the executive branch spoke to the progressive spirit in the nation and transformed the president's office for the 20th century. The courage he displayed in his confrontation of big business and willingness to side with workers in capital labor disputes, as well as his commitment to the preservation of federal lands, set agendas his successors had to match. Like Roosevelt, William Howard Taft pushed antitrust rulings and expanded federal oversight of interstate commerce. But estrangement from his predecessor and mentor left Taft in a difficult position for re-election. Roosevelt's third-party challenge as a progressive split the Republican Party and handed Woodrow Wilson the presidency in 1912. A progressive like his predecessors, Wilson was also a political creature who understood the need to do more in order to ensure his re-election. He too sought to limit the power of big businesses and stabilize the economy, and he ushered in a wave of progressive legislation that grassroots progressives had long called for. The nation's entanglement in World War I, however, soon shunted the progressive goals of democracy, efficiency, regulation, and social justice to the back burner. The nation's new priorities included national security and making the world safe for democracy. 22.1. Turner, Mahan, and the Roots of Empire. In the last decades of the 19th century, after the Civil War, the United States pivoted from a profoundly isolationist approach to a distinct zeal for American expansion. The nation's earlier isolationism originated from the deep scars left by the Civil War and its need to recover both economically and mentally from that event. Both as the Industrial Revolution changed the way the country worked and the American West reached its furthest point, American attitudes toward foreign expansion shifted. Businesses sought new markets to export their factory-built goods, oil and tobacco products, as well as generous trade agreements to secure access to raw materials. Early social reformers saw opportunities to spread Christian gospel and the benefits of American life to those in less developed nations. With the rhetoric of Frederick J. Turner and the strategies of Alfred Mahan, underpinning the desire for expansion abroad, the country moved quickly to ready itself for the creation of an American empire. 22.2, the Spanish-American War and Overseas Empire. In the wake of the Civil War, American economic growth, combined with the efforts of evangelist missionaries to push for greater international influence and overseas presence. By confronting Spain over its imperial rule in Cuba, the United States took control of valuable territories in Central America and the Pacific. For the United States, the first step towards becoming an empire was a decisive military one. By engaging with Spain, the United States was able to gain valuable territories in Latin America and Asia, as well as send a message to the other global powers. The untested U.S. Navy proved superior to the Spanish fleet, and the military strategists who planned the war in the broader context of empire caught the Spanish by surprise. The annexation of the former Spanish colonies of Guam, Puerto Rico, and the Philippines, combined with the acquisition of Hawaii, Samoa, and Wake Island, positioned the United States as the predominant world power in the South Pacific and Caribbean. While some prominent figures in the United States vehemently disagreed with the idea of American empire building, their concerns were overruled by an American public and a government that understood American power overseas as a form of prestige, prosperity, and progress. 22.3, economic imperialism in East Asia. The United States shifted from isolationism to empire building with its involvement and victory in the Spanish-American War. But at the same time, the country sought to expand its reach through another powerful tool, its economic clout. The Industrial Revolution gave American businesses an edge in delivering high-quality products at lower costs, and the pursuit of an open-door policy with China opened new markets to American goods. This trade agreement allowed the United States to continue to build power through economic advantage. 22.4, Roosevelt's Big Stick Foreign Policy. When Roosevelt succeeded McKinley as president, he implemented a key strategy for building an American empire, the threat rather than the outright use of military force. McKinley had engaged the U.S. military in several successful skirmishes and then used the country's superior industrial power to negotiate beneficial foreign trade agreements. Roosevelt, with his big stick policy, was able to keep the United States out of military conflicts by employing the legitimate threat of force. Nonetheless, as negotiations with Japan illustrated, the maintenance of an empire was fraught with complexity. Changing alliances, shifting economic needs, and power politics all meant that the United States would need to tread carefully to maintain its status as a world power. 22.4, Taft's Dollar Diplomacy. All around the globe, Taft sought to use U.S. economic power as a lever in foreign policy. He relied less on military action or the threat of such action than McKinley or Roosevelt, but he both threatened and used military force when economic coercion proved unsuccessful, as it did in his bid to pay off Central America's debts with U.S. dollars. In Asia, Taft tried to continue to support the balance of power, but his efforts backfired and alienated Japan. Increasing tensions between the United States and Japan would finally explode nearly 30 years later, with the outbreak of World War II. 23.1, American Isolationism and the European Origins of War. President Wilson had no desire to embroil the United States in the bloody and lengthy war that was devastating Europe. His foreign policy, through his first term and his campaign for re-election, focused on keeping the United States out of the war and involving the country in international affairs only when there was a moral imperative to do so. After his 1916 re-election, however, the free trade associated with neutrality proved impossible to secure against the total war strategies of the belligerents, particularly Germany's submarine warfare. Ethnic ties to Europe meant that much of the general public was more than happy to remain neutral. Wilson's reluctance to go to war was mirrored in Congress, where 56 voted against the war resolution. The measure still passed, however, and the United States went to war against the wishes of many of its citizens. 23.2, the United States prepares for war. Wilson might have entered the war unwillingly, but once it became inevitable, he quickly moved to use federal legislation and government oversight to put into place the conditions for the nation's success. First, he sought to ensure that all logistical needs, from fighting men to raw materials for wartime production, were in place and within government reach. from legislating rail service to encouraging Americans to buy Liberty loans and bring the boys home sooner, the government worked to make sure that the conditions for success were in place. Then came the more nuanced challenge of ensuring that a country of immigrants from both sides of the conflict fell in line as Americans, first and foremost. Aggressive propaganda campaigns combined with a series of restrictive laws to silence dissenters ensured that Americans would either support the war or at least stay silent. While some conscientious objectors and others spoke out, the government's efforts were largely successful in silencing those who had favored neutrality. 23.3, a new home front. The First World War remade the world for all Americans, whether they served abroad or stayed at home. For some groups, such as women and blacks, the war provided opportunities for advancement. As soldiers went to war, women and African Americans took on jobs that had previously been reserved for white men. In return for a no-strike pledge, workers gained the right to organize. Many of these shifts were temporary, however, and the end of the war came with a cultural expectation that the old social order would be reinstated. Some reform efforts also proved short-lived. President Wilson's wartime agencies managed the wartime economy effectively, but closed immediately with the end of the war, although they reappeared a short while later with the New Deal. While patriotic fervor allowed progressives to pass prohibition, the strong demand for alcohol made the law unsustainable. Women's suffrage, however, was a progressive movement that came to fruition in part because of the circumstances of the war, and unlike prohibition, it remained. 23.4. From War to Peace. Americans' involvement in World War I came late. Compared to the incredible carnage endured by Europe, the United States' battles were brief and successful, although the appalling fighting conditions and significant casualties made it feel otherwise to Americans, both at war and at home. For Wilson, victory in the fields of France was not followed by triumphs in Versailles or Washington, D.C., where his vision of a new world order was summarily rejected by his Allied counterparts and then by the U.S. Congress. Wilson had hoped that America's political influence could steer the world to a place of more open and tempered international negotiations. His influence did lead to the creation of the League of Nations, but the concerns at home impeded the process so completely that the United States never signed the treaty that Wilson worked so hard to create. 23.5. Demobilization and its difficult aftermath. The end of a successful war did not bring the kind of celebration the country craved or anticipated. The flu pandemic, economic troubles, and racial and ideological tensions combined to make the immediate post-war experience in the United States one of anxiety and discontent. As the 1920 presidential election neared, Americans made it clear that they were seeking a break from the harsh realities that the country had been forced to face through the previous years of progressive mandates and war. By voting in President Warren G. Harding in a landslide election, Americans indicated their desire for a government that would leave them alone, keep taxes low, and limit social progressivism and international intervention. 24.1. Prosperity and the production of popular entertainment. For many middle-class Americans, the 1920s was a decade of unprecedented prosperity. Rising earnings generated more disposable income for the consumption of entertainment, leisure, and consumer goods. This new wealth coincided with and fueled technological innovations, resulting in the booming popularity of entertainments like movies, sports, and radio programs. Henry Ford's advances in assembly line efficiency created a truly affordable automobile, making car ownership a possibility for many Americans. Advertising became as big as industry as the manufactured goods that advertisers represented, and many families relied on new forms of credit to increase their consumption levels and strive for a new American standard of living. 24.2. Transformation and backlash. The old and new came into sharp conflict in the 1920s. In many cases, this divide was geographic as well as philosophical. City dwellers tended to embrace the cultural changes in the era, whereas those who lived in rural towns clung to traditional norms. The Sacco and Vanzetti trial in Massachusetts, as well as the Scopes trial in Tennessee, revealed many Americans' fears and suspicions about immigrants, radical politics, and the ways in which new scientific theories might challenge traditional Christian beliefs. Some reacted more zealously than others, leading to the inception of nativist and fundamental philosophies and the rise of terror groups such as the Ku Klux Klan. 24.3, a new generation. Different groups reacted to the upheavals of the 1920s in different ways. Some people, especially young urbanites, embraced the new amusements and social venues of the decade. Women found new opportunities for professional and political advancement, as well as new models of sexual liberation. However, the women's rights movement began to wane with the passage of the 19th Amendment. For black artists of the Harlem Renaissance, the decade was marked less by leisure and consumption than by creativity and purpose. African American leaders like Marcus Garvey and W.E.B. Du Bois responded to the retrenched racism of the time with different campaigns for civil rights and black empowerment. Others, like the writers of the Lost Generation, reveled in exposing the hypocrisies and shallowness of mainstream middle-class culture. Meanwhile, the passage of Prohibition served to increase the illegal production of alcohol and led to a rise in organized crime. 24.4, Republican Ascendancy, Politics in the 1920s. After World War I, Americans were ready for a return to normalcy, and the Republican Warren Harding offered them just that. Under the guidance of his big business backers, Harding's policies supported businesses at home and isolation from foreign affairs. His administration was racked by scandals, and after he died in 1923, Calvin Coolidge continued his policy legacy in much the same vein. Herbert Hoover, elected as Coolidge's heir apparent, planned for more of the same until the stock market crash ended a decade of Republican ascendancy.